Good Monday morning, you guys. Oh my goodness. You are listening to Author Talk with me, Amy Valerie Russell, and our lovely author guest today is Donna Conrad, whose book comes out tomorrow. So I'm excited to dive in. But first, weekends, you guys. So my sister-in-law, I was going to call her my niece-in-law, but she's my sister-in-law. She is in color guard at Ronald Reagan High School in San Antonio, and their competition was this weekend. I haven't been able to have the opportunity to see her do her color guard, and she is a junior. So me and the girls got to go down and watch her since it was in College Station up by A&M, which, as you all know, galled my soul. Okay, I went to UTSA. Josh went to UH. We are Cougs for life. And so it was a galled my soul, but I went for her because I love her and she did fabulous. I haven't been able to have the opportunity to see them. The girls absolutely loved it. So now we've gone from gymnastics and tap dance to color guard and spinning flags around. So it was fun and adventurous. It's always fun to have them come in and visit us and to see her shine and do all those and watch her grow up. I have known her since she was 7 years old, you guys. So to see this is a humbling thing, but it also makes you feel old. Okay. It makes you just feel old. Okay?
Yeah. You hadn't even started feeling old yet.
No, but I know.
I was going to go there, Russell.
Oh, you
hadn't God. Even got started.
I know.
You have
I'm 100
kids. That's why you feel old. But that's
no, exactly. I know. But it's because it made me stop to think about I have, and I know I can't compete with any of you guys on here because I am the youngest. I know we don't have to.
You don't want to win at that competition.
No, I don't want to. No, but I have been with Josh like over 10 years. We've been married for 8. And oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, Josh doesn't listen to our shows and he's not here. So I can totally say this. I thought our wedding anniversary is coming up in June. We'd been married 7 years. We've been married 8. And he's the one that corrected me. I was like, oh my gosh.
This at least you have a husband like that. I forgot my first anniversary.
Oh my gosh. Your first
so at least you have a better husband than my
at least
boy
it was 8.
Yeah, but Amy, I don't know. Amy, do you do this too? I count like before we were married, and I'm like, okay, wait, that was a year before we were married, but then we've been married this long, and then you're like, wait, which one is it? I don't know.
Yeah, that's how I remembered because I was like, man, we got married in 2016. And I was like, so how many years ago was that? And I didn't forget our anniversary. I know it because I picked the date. So I know it. But I forgot how long we had been
married.
It just
seems like, longer to Josh.
I'm sure to Josh.
That's
it's
what it
longer.
Is. It just seems a lot longer to Josh.
I'm sure. That is for sure. But the girls had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. It's always fun when Josh's dad comes in town to see the kids and to spoil the kids. So it was a ton of fun. So that's enough about my weekend. Who wants to go first and tell me about theirs? Well, popcorn.
I'll tell
you. Yay,
sure,
mommy.
Sure. So yeah, we headed up to UTSA. Yeah, see some little roadrunners up there. But we did see for family day. So it was family day with our youngest son. And that was a great, great thing. This is the fourth time we've had family day with our kids because we have 4 kids. So I'm like, yes, this is the epic day when we're just all like support, support, support. So that's always a
you
great
know,
thing.
I don't get family day. Uh-huh. I don't get
Russell.
That.
Russell.
When I went to college, my dad said, see you later. And I saw him when Christmas, the holiday came. And then again, when I left back for school, I saw him in June when
but
the
you
semester
went like
was over.
Far away for school. You didn't
sometimes.
Go just like you didn't just go like a 4-hour drive. You
yeah,
went
I don't,
like,
I don't yeah. get it. I mean, well, I didn't want my parents there. I didn't want any of the girls' parents there either.
Well, and I think, you know, it's just a chance, I think, for them to show off the campus and we do a little activities together. And it's just one more reason to go up and we just eat a bunch of food in San Antonio. That's why we go. We go up there.
We
to
know.
Eat
you got to make sure your boy's going to class.
It's yeah, make sure the kid's going to school and then we eat on the way and we all go. Yeah. It's like, okay, what's our favorite restaurants in San Antonio? This is where we're going. And that's our family day.
What is he majoring in?
Mechanical engineering.
Oh, yay! So, I love it. Hey,
yeah,
their football
to
team's
class.
Doing good. Okay.
He's going to class, and he's not majoring in mechanical engineering.
He is. I love it. I did my undergrad is there. My psychology degree in graphic design is there. But it was a research one, so I did a bunch of experiments.
Graphic design, no wonder.
So Amy, you had a psychology and graphic design.
I did. My undergrad is in experimental psychology, which is a research-based psychology. So I ran a bunch of experiments and had to write research papers. And then my minor was in graphic design. I originally went to school for graphic design. I wanted to do visual effects of movies. I didn't want to move to California. And so I went to my fallback, which was originally, it's always been psychology, but I was doing more of a clinical psych. And as crazy as everybody here is going to think that I am, I wanted to do clinical psychology and be a prison psychologist. And I really wanted to study the minds of certain kinds of criminals to see if it was, if there was
like
a commonality. If there was a commonality.
That's why you fit in so good here, Amy. You get you figure everybody out.
I understand everyone. Yes. I wish I could say that. But no, that's why when I went, their football team was atrocious. Nobody went to any of the games. And then the moment I left, I was all like, yes, Roadrunners, they're my people, because they were great. I went to the UTSA game. Of course, UTSA lost, and I had to sit on the side because I put all of my effort went into UH.
Gosh. That was a good game. We were there in the 97 degree heat, and it was awesome. It was worth
it. Yes. I know. I sat on the side because the took a lot more effort because I put
Donna cannot conceive the type of temperatures that we watched. Oh, yeah.
97 was a really good day.
Because she has perfect weather with perfect trees.
So where are you?
Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
Still, raining out. Oh. Like I said, spring has sprung, but somebody forgot to tell Mother Nature, but that's okay. I'll be whining about the heat when it gets to be 90 in the summer.
We'll be praying for a 90 degree day.
Yeah, we'll be praying for 90, especially during football season. We're just gonna suck it up.
It doesn't get to 90 hardly in. I live in Atlanta, Donna, and in Atlanta, it's cold most of the time. It's not hot like Houston.
It's cold to your Houstonian self. Yeah. It's cold. To us Texans, we would take that any day.
I know.
Any
it's
day.
Great.
I mean,
if it's 70 degrees, you guys in Texas are putting your coats on and going, oh, my God.
Well, of course you are. I have a coat on right now at 70 degrees.
Exactly. That is us Texans to a T, for sure. So, Russell, what did you do this weekend? You're always my adventure seeker. What's happening?
It's not what we did, but what we decided to do.
Okay. I like it.
We were going to Paris on June 19th, and my wife came in last night and said, I'm going to go to Greece instead. Nice. Okay. So we're going to Greece August 1st because she decided she canceled everything. She rescheduled everything. She spent the whole weekend doing. She'd come in every once in a while and say, well, why don't we do this instead of that? Okay. So we're taking a cruise out of Rome. We're going to be in Rome for like 4 days, and then we're going to take a cruise down Italy and through Greece. And that's all big decision this weekend. So we're pretty excited about it. It's what she this is kind of a stress release for Melinda. So I'm good. She let me go to Japan for a couple of weeks, Donna. Mm. So after getting to walk through Japan and eat my way through Japan, I can suffer by going to Greece.
What parts of Japan were you in? Or did you go all
we
over?
Spent a week in Tokyo, and then we ate our way south to Kyoto.
Kyoto is one of my favorite cities.
In fact, the main prefecture of Kyoto, where the geisha, as you probably know, Donna, where the geisha, it's like the most traditionalist and old-fashioned most part of Kyoto. It's a geo. Is that how you pronounce it, Donna?
Yes.
Geo.
Well, it's close enough.
Okay, Gion. Whatever it is. Province, they have closed it to foreign tourists because some ridiculous, terrible foreign tourists have been harassing geisha.
Oh.
So that's like a big deal to me. That prefecture is like, it's like going back in time in Japan.
It truly
is. Unbelievable.
It is pretty remarkable. The whole area. I just love Kyoto. And one thing I learned in the kanji when you're trying to take the Shinkansen back and forth between Tokyo, Tokyo is the, just turn it upside down and you've got Kyoto. So you can find your way back between the two cities.
It wouldn't work for me.
Because when I was there, there was very little in English. I was back there in the
Tokyo, in Tokyo now, there's English everywhere. And almost everyone speaks English. In Kyoto, there is no English and no one speaks English, which I love both. Anyway, Donna, what did you do this weekend? I need...
Well, you all sound so exciting. I'm a writer, but I was in Alexandria, Egypt. I'm writing on the second book in the series. And I finally got Miriam the Magdalene out of Judea and into Alexandria. So I'm very excited. She's there. She settled in. And because she was hunted by Rome, she needed to flee Judea. And so I got to go across the Sinai and get her all settled in this beautiful, incredible port city.
Donna, I have a question about that.
Do you really?
Yes, I actually do. But before I do that, I have to thank those people that listen to us on our podcast. We're top 10 independent book podcast in America, and we want to thank those listening to us. Most people don't listen to us when we go live on Monday morning. They listen to us during the week on our podcast while they're working out or driving home. Amy actually changed it so it's easier to find us. I never could find us before she changed everything. Now, I can find us. Amy, where can people find us on our podcast?
Yes. So like Russell said, most people listen to us throughout the week. They don't generally watch us live in our groups, but you can go and watch us on Facebook, YouTube, any one of our social media channels to engage with us. We do like having your comments and engaging. And all of us, except for Russell, so me and Valerie, mostly control what comes out of our mouth, but our facial expressions say a different story, and we are very animated, so it's a lot of fun. We are more than happy to laugh with you at us or at ourselves. I do both all the time. So make sure you come on over and join us. But like Russell said, even he can find us, so there's no excuse why you cannot find us. We rebranded 3 years ago, I believe, and it's crimson, red, and gold. I know, because I'm selfish and I love
those
colors.
Was that 3 years ago?
It's been a really long time. Yeah.
I can't believe that. It just flew by.
And she's been married 8 years, not seven.
Yes.
No, it just seems like 8 years. She thinks seven.
We're getting there. Poor Josh. Sure. Oh, poor Josh. No, but anywhere that you can find a podcast, you can hear us. So Amazon, Google, Apple, Spotify, Good Pods is my go-to ones because that's where I go. We are everywhere else included that host podcast. So just type in Author Talk, look for the Crimson, Red, and Gold, and that is us. We are incredibly humbled and honored to be in the top 10 independent book podcast. We have been doing this for... 8 years.
8 years.
So crazy. 8 years. And to believe that it all started with Russell, it was Russell's idea to do it, him and Sandy. And if you want to go and see how Author Talk got started and see how we evolved into what we are today and where we potentially will be going, go over to our YouTube channel or you can listen to us. All of our shows from these 8 years have been on there. We do not miss a Monday morning. Even if it's Christmas, that will be pre-recorded, but we air every single
Monday. Even
month.
If Amy is in labor.
True.
We did a
that
show
a
when
statement.
Amy
we
was
did
in
know.
Labor, and she was no. on the show.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
It was an unbelievable show.
That was almost 5 years ago, Russell. Almost.
I never get over it.
But she didn't have the baby on the show.
Oh, my goodness.
You're a total badass.
Okay. So... I feel the need, every time Russell brings up this story, Donna, I feel the need to give disclaimers to this because when people hear that I was in labor on the show, they're thinking everything. No, okay, I was in labor at the hospital, yes, but I was not actively pushing, so that was not on there. I was.
Did
just
you hear that, Donna? She would, that's how she minimalizes it.
We will
I wasn't actively pushing.
I mean, she's Amy, that is just so normal. Anybody in labor would be on a podcast.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, yeah. I'm telling you,
great multitasker, Russell. That's why.
Author Talk does not miss a Monday, you guys. And if Amy has to miss a Monday, we have to set it up for success because we got to go live.
Plus,
someone has to figure out how to do that.
But that's proof that you should respect Amy's authority because she means business.
Anyways, it's been a lot of fun, you guys, in this 8 years. So if you want to go and see and hear our original very first season episodes where it's just Sandy and Russell and I turn the camera around and tune in.
And we were so terrible.
It was so funny. We were so terrible. You have to go watch them. They were so great. But it is fun to see because you guys all know, those of you guys that have listened to us and followed us for a long time, I do not go back and re-listen to them. I don't like the sound of my voice, so I don't go back and do it. But I do go back and watch those first ones because it's funny how I just am like, oh, hold on. And then I turn the camera around and I chat. And then I'm like, okay, I'm back. And then it's like a whole thing into what we have evolved. So go and check it out because it was a lot of fun looking back on it. Those were like the pivotal days. It was so much fun. We got to go visit Russell and shoot all these things. And it was just a fun, fun time. So make sure that you go and check those out. But let's get Donna talking about her book that drops tomorrow. So, Valerie, take it away.
That is so exciting. Yeah.
Donna, let me prepare myself.
Great moment, I'm sure, for you. So excited. But can we just start first at how you began with your memoir and how that led to this, possibly because, you know, maybe a process of self-discovery or so. And how long ago mm-hmm. was that memoir? And Let me go ahead and get the name of the memoir out there. Could you please?
Yes, it's House of the Moon, Surviving the 60s. And uh-huh. the subtitle is key to the story because uh-huh. my life in the 60s was a little bit, well, life in the 60s was a little bit crazy. Mine was a little mind altering. And the tagline is drug, sex, and rock and roll is just the beginning. Uh-huh. So I lived about 25 miles outside of Los Angeles with an undercover narcotics agent for a father and an older sister whose boyfriend dealt drugs to all the bands that came through LA. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a dichotomy set up from the very beginning. And
how old were you when all this was happening?
Well, the book only goes, it starts when I'm 13, almost 14, and just goes until I'm 18. So it's a 4 year.
So you're very aware.
Except when I was on the drugs. This is a disclaimer. Do not do drugs. One of the things I say, the drugs in the 1960s were so much more innocent, it seemed.
That's what my kids tell me. They were lighter, too. That's what my kids tell me. And how do you know that? They're like, Dad.
Oh, I do because my niece brought something up for us to smoke when we were in our... not that long ago, and you take one hit off of one joint, which is legal now in Oregon, and both my husband and I were just flattened against the couch like this for 3 hours, just staring into space, going, okay. And she's saying, yeah, it's a little stronger than what you were used to in the 60s.
And that's a kid from the 60s that's just talking right now, by the way.
Exactly. It was a crazy time and why I did it. Like Amy, my major in college was psychology. Only I wasn't doing clinical, I was doing Jungian psychology. So more.
Oh my gosh. We need to have a show then, Donna, and talk about Jungian theory and how we agree and disagree. Oh my gosh. We have a Jungian on the show.
We do.
I'm so excited about this. But that's a whole different story. I should have.
That's a whole different show. We're sticking to the books. It's coming out.
Yes.
It's amazing. So I wanted to write, first I wanted to write a book that would kind of demythify the 60s because everybody thinks it is the rock stars, the glamour, a generation that changed the world. And as one reviewer said, it's like going to sleep and waking up in the trenches.
You know, I don't because, think of it like that. I think of it as like they need to take a shower.
Oh no, I was a very clean hippie.
I'm talking about the pictures.
The pictures? Well, yeah, it depended. If you were out in a meadow for 4 days listening to music, you didn't exactly get to bathe.
Yeah, you need a shower.
So it was living in that time, the main thing that I discovered or rediscovered was that women did not have the rights that we have now. It was my generation that fought for the fact that a woman could have a credit card in her own name, that a woman could own a house. I mean, my mother had to wait for my father's permission to get a driver's license. You know, the 60s were such a repressive time. People were coming out of the Depression. They were coming out of World War II. And everything was very structured. Then my generation came around and said, structure? What is that? Why do we need to do that? Mm-hmm. So it was a time of change. But then what I say also, House of the Moon is the best therapy I've ever had, because it's going back and reliving all of those traumas and writing them so people could understand what it was like to go through this. And there's violence in this. I mean, there's physical violence, mental violence, you know, domestic abuse, there's sexual abuse. There are all these things that were very dark, which is the cover over here, is dark because the times were, you know, we fought to bring the light into people's lives. So that's why I wrote it and got over a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. And when was that one published?
That was originally published in 2013. And then it went through a big overhaul, a big edit, and came back out with this cover in 2016. So mm-hmm. a while ago. The first one had me, a picture of me when I was 18 in a black mini skirt with high boots on and kind of a psychedelic cover, which you'll see on Goodreads and other places, that original cover. And people were a little traumatized. They thought it was a fun romp through the 60s. So we went back, took a few chapters out. I rewrote a few of the chapters and reissued it with a more appropriate cover.
Mm-hmm. So how did that lead to this new book? Because that's a like 9 year, 10 year journey almost.
Yes. So originally I had started with The Last Magdalene, which has gone through so many name changes. It was not even related to The Last Magdalene, the title before. And I needed to set it aside because I felt it wasn't real enough, it wasn't deep enough. And so when I wrote House of the Moon, I wrote it because my passion is to talk about women who've been marginalized throughout history, who've been silenced. And I realized I was one. So when I wrote about myself in the most honest, brutal, kind of graphic way, I felt, okay, wait a minute, now I can do this. I can reapproach The Last Magdalene and write it so that it really reaches out and touches people. So that's how it led to it. And this whole series, it's a 4-book series, is about her life. And then I plan to move on to other women that have been marginalized and silenced. And let's give them all a voice.
You're muted, Valerie.
Sorry, my dogs are like click, click, clicking in the background a lot. So I didn't want them to like interrupt you. And I think this actually, The Last Magdalene, is almost like an extension possibly of yourself, finding like just, or, you know, another character that is becoming independent and living her best life. Is that something along those lines?
Well, what Henry Miller, the famous author, said, all writing is autobiographical. Yes. So yeah, there are parts of me in there. I don't think you can write something that you haven't experienced in some way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so in this book, there's heartbreak and that, and we've all experienced those things. So yeah, I think some of it is me. I put it into the different characters and, but it's possible because I was able to write so honestly about my life.
Mm-hmm. And I do feel that happens with me a lot too. Just and I tell that even when I teach kids for the creative writing, I was like, you know, write what you know, or, you know, something that you're familiar with. And then it just translates into so much more rich, vivid experiences in your writing for your characters and the storytelling. So I feel like that's probably going to be evident here from, you know, so you said it's like the therapeutic book, The House of the Moon. How did you transition over to historical fiction, however?
Well, I have always loved reading. I read mostly historical fiction. And my minor in college, it was I switched from English and psychology to English and history, because when I was a junior in college, I never liked history before. And when I was a junior in college, I had this professor who just brought history to life. It was remarkable. And I went, oh, wow, I want more of that. So I started researching, and I love the research aspect of it. And so originally I had met a Magdalen scholar who had read one of my previous books. And she said, you should write about this woman, Mary Magdalene. And I went, wasn't she in the Bible? And she said, okay, we're going to talk. And so she explained to me about how to dig past what we know as the New Testament and to look to other sources in that. And I just dove into it. And I fell in love with the fact that she was such a strong, powerful, dynamic woman that basically got written out once the resurrection happens and she sees the risen Jesus, then she disappears. And it's like, no, somebody that important wouldn't just boom, disappear. So that got me into her.
So can I ask a question, Valerie?
You may.
I'm dying to ask a question. So is part of your book put in Jerusalem of what?
Oh, most of it.
30 AD?
Well, it starts actually in 4 current era. So yes, and it goes through and it's set mostly in Judea. There are a few scenes that happen in Galilee in that area, but the majority of it take place in Jerusalem and in Bethany, which was the town to the east of Jerusalem.
So how did you manage to visualize the Jerusalem of the time? So you could write about it. And the reason I say this is because when I'm writing a trial novel right now, and I have to visualize this courthouse so I can write about it and use it in the description and stuff. So how did you do that? And did you draw maps of it? Did you pull up maps of the Roman Jerusalem? How'd you do that?
All of the above. And there is a wonderful thing. I think it's at the Holy Land Hotel or something. They have a miniature reconstruction of Jerusalem in first century before, because the temple, all of Jerusalem and the temple especially was destroyed in 70 and by the Romans. And so it was just leveled to the ground. I mean, the Roman general said, leave no stone upon it.
You know, that's interesting. You can still walk among the stones of the temple that were pushed off the mount onto the side of the hill. They rode down there. They're still there because I've actually walked among them. So, but, you know, that doesn't exist anymore. So, how did you describe Old Jerusalem?
I described it a lot. So we have the Synoptic Gospels in the New Testament, which is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, although they don't agree on a lot. Some things they do. But then we also have the Book of John. And archaeologically, John is the most accurate in describing what Jerusalem was like at that time. So I read the Book of John quite a lot, but then we have other people who were present at the time, and some people who knew a lot about Jerusalem, knew a lot about Galilee, were the Egyptians and the Alexandrians, the Ptolemies,
and of course the Romans.
They didn't write much about it though. Until the rebellions began, Judea was just like this backwater.
Oh, yeah. It was a disgrace to be the governor of it.
Exactly. And it was where the lesser government officials went, you know, to prove themselves.
Okay, I'll go back to Valerie. I wanted to talk a little bit about how you put the book in Roman Jerusalem of the time.
Well, and a part of that is we do have sources from that time. Josephus, who wrote a little bit after, about 70 current era, but back then things didn't change like so quickly as they do now. So, and we do have maps that were drawn back at that time. And then you read what life was like. And, you know, Pliny and a lot of other historians have written about the times. Did that answer you?
Yes, Pliny, right? Pliny. Yes. Josephus.
So can you tell us a little bit about what the plot is and then her journey? Because it sounds like it has a lot of ups and downs.
It does, as most lives do. But one of the things I found out early on in my research from archaeological digs is that there was, I'm not going to call it a worship, but an association and a closeness to a female aspect of divinity. And we are so schooled that the Hebrews had one God and nobody else. And yet there was still the influence from the Canaanites, from the people who were before, from their time in Babylon. So my biggest aha and what is the crux of the book is that Miriam, the Magdalene is a title. It's not a name. And just for those listening and for the three of you, the town of Magdala did not exist when she was alive. So to say she came Mary of Magdala, you can't come from a town that didn't exist. So if you read in the original Aramaic and the Greek, it's either Miriam Magdalene or Miriam the Magdalene. And so I'm looking at that as a title, much that we know now Merlin in the Arthurian legends was a title. That wasn't his name. The Merlin was the chief druid. And so since there are so many Miriams in the Bible, I'm taking that much like it came down in the Catholic tradition that when you become a nun or a bride of Christ, you take the name Mary. So Miriam was the first, was a sister of Aaron and Moses. And you're all getting a history lesson now. So anyway, what we're getting to is that there was a body of priestesses who acted as midwives, as healers, as surrogates for the goddess. And so that is her position. And so the book is sensual in a lot of ways because they were women who were raised. I mean, you mentioned, Russell, about geisha. Well, in Hebrew, the term is kadesha. And so there's a similarity there, but they're Kadesha is a sacred vessel. And so I have Miriam being a Kadesha and working towards, as her mother and grandmother were, becoming the Magdalene, the high priestess of the goddess Ashara, or the female aspect of divinity. So her journey goes from being pretty much this privileged, pampered, highly sensual, trained priestess to basically having Rome come in, take over, having everything in her life destroyed and needing to rebuild herself from the ashes of that.
That's what Rome does. Phoenix.
That's what Rome does.
Rome does. That's the definition of Rome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's an all-consuming beast.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. And then I like, you know, it says in the description of the story, which I'm so excited that it's coming out tomorrow, is that she was in an arranged marriage. And then she's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And that was probably just the epitome of like rebellion at all levels. Just so choosing her own path was is that what you wanted her to do initially, just choose her own path?
I wanted her to always feel that she could outsmart or outmaneuver fate.
Oh, yes.
And destiny. And so, as she says right in the beginning of the book, She said, I was dedicated to the goddess before I was even conceived. True. So her life was one of this, and she was born to fulfill prophecy. And the prophecy was that there would arise a king in the line of David that would overthrow the conquerors and reestablish a 1,000-year reign of peace. And that is what the Messiah was at this time. It had no religious connotation. It mm-hmm. was a king. And this king was prophesied to come when a great power was threatening the existence of Jerusalem, mm-hmm. which was the holy city. And so this king in Hebraic tradition had to come from the line of David, and he had to marry a daughter of Bethany or the tribe of Benjamin. So that's mm-hmm. the arranged marriage, is between who we come now to know as Jesus. At that time, you would have been Yeshua bar Joseph mm-hmm. and Miriam of Bethany. And that this marriage was foretold for thousands of years. And how do you fight something like that?
Yeah. Yeah. And without giving it away, do we have a sequel coming too?
We have 3 sequels.
Okay, good. Yeah. But will it be the same character, or we have like independent stories? Like, you know, okay, we're going to keep following Miriam.
Yeah, right. So Rome, as Russell was saying, you know, was this massive power. So if you had insurrection against Rome, everybody connected with you was hunted down and murdered. That was mm-hmm. it. If you weren't a Roman citizen, you were crucified. So yes. Jesus wasn't the only one. The guy before Pilate crucified 3,000 mm-hmm. insurrectionists in Jerusalem, you know, mm-hmm. in the area. So this was that. So they hunted down. So we hear in the New Testament that all the disciples went into hiding. That, and they should. That was the smartest thing they did. I mean, you know.
They still died a violent death.
They had, you know, you're still going to, you run, you hide. And mm-hmm. the traditional place of exile, which we know from Jesus when he was a baby, is Egypt. Yes. And so the Magdalene goes to Alexandria, and that's the Lost and the Holy, the next book. And mm-hmm. from there, there were, what they're saying is the first pogrom against the Hebrews happened. Mm-hmm. And from there, they took ship and went to Southern Gaul. So that's the third book. And then the fourth book is the Magdalene's daughter retelling everything from her perspective, as starting out as a very young girl in Jerusalem. And wow. what happened next. And there's going to be a lot of mother-daughter issues. You can imagine having a mother like that.
Yes.
So yes,
what an incredible amount of research for you. My gosh, it's so extensive, but it sounds like it's a passion for you. Russell, do you feel like she's got a passion here?
I do. I'm dying though. I have a million more questions that I just have to keep my mouth shut.
Okay. We can only take 900,000. We can't get to a million.
My questions are directed at how you deal with the governing bodies in your novel, and how do you deal with this Jewish woman dealing with Rome and the Roman aristocrats or the governing bodies, and if when you're writing about her in Egypt, are you writing about the library or Egypt was the center of learning in the world at that time. So how did you include that?
Okay. So that's in the next book.
That's what I know. That's
it's coming up. So in Jerusalem, in the first book, there are so many levels of governing. And first is in the Temple of Ashara. And she has to obey all these rules and everything. She breaks away from that. And then you have Rome, which ruled with an iron fist.
They ruled, so but they didn't care about whether you had other religions as long as you didn't cause any trouble.
Right. But if you happen to be hanging out with a bunch of folks that say they know the true king of United Israel and Judea, and he's going to take over and defeat and,
well, then
and
you throw Rome,
and then you got a trouble. Then you've got Rome's interest. Mm-hmm. So in Alexandria, in the next book, because she's a highly intelligent, highly passionate, courageous woman, and when she goes to Egypt and to Alexandria, she's befriended by Lysandra, who is the high priestess of Isis. And so in that place, at that time, Rome didn't have much to do with Egypt. They didn't even have a prefect there. During this time period,
they did. I don't know if I agree with you about that.
I will.
Egypt
you look
did
it up.
What Rome told you to do.
Exactly, but they were settled, and so there was no prefect there saying you will do this and this and this and this. They behaved themselves. They kept their head down. They kept grain going to Rome, and so you know, quiet peace in Rome and quiet on the fronts, and peace in Rome. The Pax Romana. And so Egypt kind of kept its head down, but it did have a different understanding of divinity. And that's what the Magdalene learns, that there's more. So her vision is expanded while she's dealing with people that have learned to coexist with Rome, which the Hebrews never did. So did that answer your question?
Sure, we could argue all day, right?
Yeah, plus,
we hadn't even got on the Young Indian argument, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
my goodness.
We're not going to Young today. We're not.
No, oh, my goodness. I do have a statement, Donna, and I want to know how, I mean, I can imagine how this makes you feel, but I want our listeners and our watchers to do. So on your book page, that it comes out tomorrow, it says, the last Magdalene does for the New Testament what the red tint did for the Old Testament. And so when you got that and being compared to the red tent is an amazing, that book is amazing. It's done a lot of wonderful things. So what was that like pivotal moment where you kind of realized, oh, wow, the last Magdalene is doing for the New Testament what the red tent did for the old one. What was that experience or kind of like for you when you kind of read that and got that?
Well, I got that because in the red tent, we have a very small story about Dina. Mm-hmm. And so she's just a name. And to me, in the New Testament, even though the Magdalene's mentioned more than any other woman except Jesus's mother throughout the New Testament, all of a sudden she just vanishes. And we don't know what her life was like. She in the New Testament, she was just a follower and she was a financial supporter. But what was her life like? So what I'm doing is humanizing her and saying, this is what the day-to-day was like. What was it to go up against Rome? What was it to go against everything that you had been taught as a child? And so to me, the comparison is pretty apt, and I'm delighted with the comparison.
Yeah.
And I think it humanizes the people in the New Testament.
Oh, for sure. And I like the closing statement. And I'm going to leave it with this closing statement and then what your feelings are towards this. And then we'll do closing questions, statements, because if I get an evil eye from Russell, it's a really bad week for me.
We could talk to this author for like 3 hours.
I know we could.
So many things to talk to her about.
So it has in here, and this is so beautifully written, and I feel like because I have had the privilege of reading this book. Yes, Donna, I have finished your book.
Yeah.
It. It only took me forever, but I finished the book because life gets in the way. But it says, The Last Magdalene is an exquisite story of passion and love and the lasting power of one woman's voice that refuses to be silenced. When I finished the book, I reread this sentence, and it really did stick with me as like, wow, that really is the whole embodiment of this book. It truly is. When you read it and you go through all the ups and downs and the dark moments and coming out of those and stuff, that sentence really summarized it for me. And so I'm curious to know, is when you were writing it and then you wrote this sentence, is that your goal for your whole 4-book kind of story of, you know, the Magdalene, is it to bring out those, I know we had talked about women's voices, but just the passion and love and refusing to be silenced. Is that the trending or commonality between all of them? Was that your driving force? Because that's what comes across when you read the book. And so I'm curious, I was like, was this your intent? Because if not, oh my gosh, it's wonderful. And you did it beautifully.
It was not a happy accident. Good. And it is, because she goes on to become a renowned teacher in her own right. And she has her own understanding of, we could say, unconditional love, mm-hmm. of compassion, of inclusion, of just that love that has come down as being from Yeshua Bar Joseph. And so she has a deep understanding of that, and her voice grows even stronger as the series progresses, so that mm-hmm. she stands in her own light. And as I said, she's a woman who stood on her own. She wasn't always on her knees crying and weeping and being the one that needed to be taken care of. No, she was strong. She was independent. And throughout the series, she finds her voice even more.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wonderful. Yeah, because that's what really mm-hmm. comes across. And that's why I was like, man, this sentence is like so perfect. It's a wonderful, beautiful sentence. So let's do a question, yeah. Closing questions, comments, statements. Russell, you first, because you only had a million questions.
Donna, the one thing you haven't done is tell listeners how they can find you, contact you, find your books. You need to tell them.
Yes, this is very difficult. Everybody get out a pen. DonnaConrad.com. Just go there. And if you sign up, then you have a chance to win a print copy of either House of the Moon or The Last Magdalene. And also, you'll receive a secret password for the lost chapters of House of the Moon. The ones that got taken out, but really, I still think they deserve to be in there. And then you'll find out where I'm going to be speaking, the workshops I'm going to be teaching. And I do teach at a lot of writers' conferences. And just keep in touch with me. And I love to exchange, be an interchange with writers, with readers. I'm pretty much an open book.
I love it. And The Last Magdalene actually drops tomorrow. So they can go over onto Amazon or on your website and they can grab an order of your book. We will be running a special on your book for your launch starting tomorrow. So make sure that you go and do that. It has received several already accolades in and of itself, and it hasn't even come out yet. This is a book for sure you're going to want, and then leading up into the next series. So make sure you take advantage of that, because it is dropping April 9th, which is tomorrow, Donna. Oh, my God.
I am shocked. I am a bit stunned. It's like, oh, my gosh, it's here.
I know. We have made it. We have made it. Valerie, closing questions, statements, comments from you.
I would just like to say congratulations on this series. It sounds so incredible that you were able to give this almost not forgotten person, but just like brushed aside person, a voice now to live on and just experience, you know, all that she goes through the rest of her life. I think that's exceptional. Thank you.
Thank you. That means a lot. It is a labor of love.
Absolutely.
But I won't go into labor on the show.
No.
We're not going to do that. We'll leave that to Amy.
We've already done that.
Been there, done that.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, Donna, I want to thank you for taking time out of your morning to come and hang out with us and talk to us about House of the Moon and The Last Magdalene, which comes out tomorrow, you guys. So make sure you go and grab it. But thanks so much for taking time out of your morning to come hang out with us.
It has been my pleasure. And thank you all for inviting me. It's been fun. And Russell, you and I will talk another time.
I am for sure. Well, you guys, we hope that you all have a fantastic rest of your Monday, a great rest of your week. But until next Monday, bye for now, everybody.